Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Dosser. I am back again with my co-host, Bobby Reagan, the host of the Fundamentally Sound podcast. And we actually have quite a bit to talk about. We were planning on doing another Run It Back podcast for this episode, but a whole bunch of different stuff has happened over the course of the last 5 or 6 days. Philip Petrushev, Gonzaga's All-American center, has decided that he's going to go pro to Mega BMAX in Serbia. Musa Cisse, a five-star recruit, has committed to the University of Memphis, and that changes a lot of things for that Tiger program. And Jonathan Kuminga, the number one recruit in the country in the class of 2021, reclassified and is heading to the G League. But before we get into all of that, Kevin Willard, the head coach of the Seton Hall Pirates, had a brilliant idea for a way to get this college basketball season started without having to push everything back until the second semester. Before we do all of that, let me bring in the one and only Bobby Reagan, my co-host. My man, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. Doing well. Hey, you know, it's sports are coming back this week, and I'm just so excited. Like, I yesterday felt a little bit like a sports day where I watched, obviously, our Tottenham game was on. I watched the match before that. So I got two soccer matches in, caught a little bit of Saratoga Racetrack. Baseball was on last night, and I was like, oh, yeah, like, this is summer sports. And then I was like, wait a minute, it gets better because we get basketball coming back with the NBA. Obviously, the good news today of zero people in the bubble testing positive for the most recent round of testing. So that seems to be, like, all systems go. That's coming up this week. I'm finally like, all right, I'm ready just to sit in my chair and watch sports again.
I am really excited for the NBA to be back. Like, same. Really, really same. Excited for the NBA to be back. I watched a bunch of the TBT, but that is still like watching, it feels like you're watching a little bit of a glorified men's league because you have,
it's your summer fling. It's your summer fling. That's what TBT is. It's the girl from home before you go back to college, or the guy from home before you go back to college. That's what TBT is. It's short. It's in the summer. It's perfect. But you're like, wait a minute. It's not the same. There's better out there.
Yeah, it's very obvious that you're watching kind of glorified pickup basketball, but it's entertaining as hell. How do you feel about this push to get the Elam ending into college basketball?
I'm so against it, man. So against it. Listen, it's perfect for TBT. It's perfect for the NBA All-Star game. But all these people, this has now become like my, outside of like name, image, likeness, and amateurism, I have had a secret crusade, like, bitching to my friends and family about the Elam ending, where people are like, oh, this is just the perfect ending. Like, imagine games like this. I'm like, guys, games that are tied or like one possession with like 3.5 minutes to go typically end up being awesome endings regardless. And, oh, you want to complain about fouls? Guess what? They're still fouling in the Elam ending. The All-Star game ended on a damn free throw. Ain't nobody want to see a game end on a free throw.
Like, yeah, that's the most anticlimactic thing of all time.
Right. And there are still fouling. Like, you're still going to get draw-purpose fouls because, hey, a three beats you, we're going to foul so you can only shoot free throws, right? Like, if it's both a one-possession game or whatever, that's going to happen. And I'm just so against it. It takes away, all the analytical statistic, ending of games. Like, the clock – to me, it just doesn't make sense for a long-term solution. I'm so against it.
Sports are played with clocks. You play until the clock runs out. That's just the way that sports is. And I don't like the idea of taking that away. It's really just that simple. We don't have to go down that road. Before we dive into the Kevin Willard thing, this is, of course, the Craft Beer Cast. What are you drinking, Reeks?
I got your favorite one. I got the I've had it with these motherfucking IPAs at this motherfucking brewery from Listerman. It's my last one, so I had to break it out for the podcast. It's just a 5.5% IPA with some. It's a, what does it say? It's brewed with Vic's Secret, Mosaic, and Simcoe.
That's no idea just what it means, the best. But it's delicious. It's the absolute best name I've ever heard for a beer.
Yeah, and
it's not even close.
I've shown you the Samuel L. Jackson on it, right? Like you can see him there.
It's so good. I would never drink a beer from any other brewery if that was available where I'm from. I went back to the Cape Maywell, actually. I have I'm drinking a nice little you're going to be surprised by this, but I'm drinking a New England Dippa from the Cape May Brew Co. Called City to Shore, which is actually really good. I've gone away from my hatred of the juicy IPAs and the New England IPAs a little bit. Because I've found some good ones that are like the my favorite thing about when my wife goes shopping and goes to the beer store is she just knows I like IPAs. So she buys the ones with like the coolest looking cans
that
I've never had before. And normally when I go, I'm like, I can't risk not having a beer that I don't like.
Yeah.
And I can't risk like I can't just gamble on like not liking this beer. Whereas my wife will just go buy it and then she'll come back with it and I'll be like, oh, looks pretty good. Might as well give it a try. And I end up liking them. So I've found like three or four New England IPAs that I actually really, really like. And this is one of them. It definitely has like the hoppiness of what you expect out of a double IPA. But there's like a really, really good kind of fruity undertone that you get. That's not overpowering, but it just kind of, it's in the summer when you want something a little bit sweeter as opposed to just like pure hops. And like, if I could told you what I did today, it was 98 degrees with 110 degree heat index. And I've been outside like for way too long today. There was I had to take my son out for a bike ride. We went out and I turned on the sprinklers for my front yard. So him and one of his neighbor friends could go run through the sprinklers. I was outside coaching T-ball. Like I've had a lot of stuff that I've had to get done outside. So being able to come and sit down and do this podcast and have like a really hoppy IPA that's not completely bitter and is not leaving my mouth dry, but has a nice little fruity sweet aftertaste to it. It's nice, man. It's kind of what I needed. I think I've really changed my tune on some of like the juicy New England IPAs.
I mean, they're refreshing, especially in the summer.
They're a little risky though, because some of them.
Yeah, my wife came with Pink Lemonade Session IPA. I haven't tried it yet, but it's like sitting in my beer fridge, and I'm like, I don't know what this is going to be like.
Well, at least it's a session. Like the thing about these Dippas is this is 8.2%. So, and I'm drinking a tall boy. So by the end of it, like you're feeling good. You're feeling it a little bit by the end of it. And they just, when it's hot and you really just want something cool and refreshing and you're drinking something cool and refreshing, but it just so happens to be 8% alcohol, like that could be really dangerous. So like the New England IPA day drinking is something that I haven't gone down that road yet because I'm not sure I'm prepared for
that's where the damn seltzers get you at 5% because you're drinking fruit punch and it's like drink enough of them at 5% and you're feeling pretty good come the nighttime.
Speaking of which, can I tell you what I did yesterday? I accidentally got hammered.
The accidental Sunday hammered.
It was completely a mistake. So my father-in-law, like we went over to their house and like we were just grilling and they have a pool. So we take Chase there, son, to let him go swimming. And he has a really good friend of his that he just calls, I think it's Tennessee Tom or Tennessee Tim or Tennessee Ted or so. It's Tennessee and then a T name. Yeah. Yeah, so I can never remember the name, but it's Tennessee. Let's just call him Tennessee Tom because Tennessee Tom sounds good. And Tennessee Tom makes illegal moonshine.
Oh, yeah.
So my father-in-law busted it out, but I didn't realize what he was giving me. And he gave me, like, you know, like the really tall shot glasses that have, like, feels like they have two shots in them?
Yep.
He comes out with, like, a really tall shot, like, tall shot glass filled to the top with this, like, purple stuff. And I'm like, what is that? He's like, you just got to try it. Here, take the shot. And I was like, take the shot. Okay, I'll take the shot. And I just, whoa. and knocked it back. And as I'm in the middle of doing that, he's like, no, you're not supposed to. Uh-oh. And
when you hear uh-oh.
I was like, what did I do wrong? You gave me a shot glass. What was I supposed to do? He's like, you weren't supposed to shoot it because apparently it's like 180 proof or something like that. And I couldn't really tell because there was like a lot of blackberry flavor to it because it was blackberry moonshine. But like you could, it definitely burned when it was going down. And so I took that shot and I was just kind of like, well, what's going to happen now? Because I was already like two beers deep. Yeah, I wasn't prepared. So like I was feeling a little drunk. And of course, like afterwards, after I take that shot, he comes out with another one. He's like, here, you have to sip this one. And what am I supposed to say? My only answer was, I'm only taking that if you tell my wife she's driving home. That was the deal.
I mean, it's good. It's perfect. Like, I'm a big fan of surprise Sunday drunk, or like surprise weekday drunk. The one that you're just like, my favorite one was I literally met a friend for lunch and had to Uber home and walk to my car before work in an office on Monday morning. Because we were like, yeah. It was like back before the 2014 World Cup. Yeah, it was like when the U.S. were doing like their tune-up games or whatever. And we're like, oh, like, do you want to go watch it was like a Sunday noon game. Like, go get lunch at the tavern. Thought we were going to be there for lunch. We were there until 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, that's a Sunday surprise drunk. And it's still one of my favorite ones.
Yep, that'll happen. Yep. That will happen. It's dangerous. Sunday fun day, if you're not prepared for it, you
get called. And the worst part was it rained on Monday morning when I walked to go get my car.
Oh, that's brutal.
I looked like my buddy's now wife. Drove by me in the like on the main road. I just had my head down with my headphones in, just like hood up, looking like the saddest person in the world.
I wish I would have gotten a picture of hungover wet like Reese.
26-year-old me.
Oh yeah, too good, too good. All right, so Kevin Willard's idea. Let's in a nutshell. Who wrote? Was this from the New York Post? I think it was in the
New York Post. Had it. Yeah,
maybe it was the Daily News. It was one of those. No, I want to give credit to Post. It was definitely the Post.
Yeah. At least that's where the tweets that I saw, everything all came from there.
So Kevin Willard's idea is essentially that what most schools have decided that they're going to do is send kids home after Thanksgiving break. Because what they're worried about is sending kids home for like the best party night of the year, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, sending all their students home, having them party their balls off when they're home with all students from other colleges, and then sending them back to school. Right. Where they can maybe pick up coronavirus when they're at home and then spread it on campuses again, blah, 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 whatever. They don't want all of that traveling and all that intermingling and then bringing everything back to the college campus. So a lot of schools are starting early and ending right at Thanksgiving, or not even starting early. They're just ending at Thanksgiving and kids aren't coming back. And Kevin Willard's idea is essentially that he's on the same page as me, where he understands that the bigger danger for these athletes is being a student as opposed to being the actual college basketball player at practices or at games. And we don't need to rehash that. We've talked about that in past podcasts. But his idea is basically as soon as these kids leave to go home, that's when you start the season. You do a lot of rapid fire testing leading up to that. Maybe give it a week to just make sure that you don't have any false negatives. And then kick off the conference season right there and jam pack as many games as you possibly can into those, what is it? 5-6 weeks that the students are going to be home for winter break.
He had 26 games in that time frame, which would have built in, like you said, time, or like if there was a delay or if they had to take a week off for positive tests coming up or whatever. I think it's the best idea yet. Outside of ours, of putting them in hotel and doing like the TBT style with the conference tournaments and conferences all there. This is the most realistic one because everything's still the same. You're really not pushing the season that far back, right? Like the season typically starts that first week of November. You're only pushing it back 2 weeks. So you stay kind of concurrent with what everybody knows of college basketball season. And you probably get more eyeballs on it because – like, it sucks you would lose, obviously, Maui, Kentucky, Louisville, Xavier, Cincinnati, Crossroads Classic, all those big events that everybody kind of loves. But you also lose the bye games, which nobody really cares about unless Stephen F. Austin beats Duke or Evansville beats Kentucky, which, yeah, that's like a cool story. But what, at most once a year you get that?
Unless it was last year when Kentucky lost and Duke lost.
But do you remember that? Yeah.
Do you remember when the team that went 0-18 in the Missouri Valley went out and beat Kentucky in Rupp Arena?
There was underlying circumstances of why they went 0-18.
How many wins did Evansville get against Missouri Valley teams last year?
Zero with an asterisk.
They didn't get a chance.
They were getting hot before the tournament.
How many wins did they get in Rupp Arena last year?
They had one.
One. So they had more wins in Rupp Arena than they did against Missouri Valley opponents. I just want to get that out there. I just want to make sure that we have the facts right for the situation.
But like, yes, last year was the odd year where you did have obviously two of the major upsets. That just doesn't happen. Like I said, you maybe get one a year. And definitely nothing typically to the likes of Kentucky Evansville or Duke Stephen F. Austin. I'm willing to like sacrifice that for like give me 4 months of conference tournament setup.
So this is where I am mentally right now. I am prepared to not have a college basketball season.
Yeah.
I am hoping to get conference play for every tournament. Now, I would recommend to everybody that is listening to this podcast, get yourself in a mental state where anything that we get for college sports coming up, either college football or college basketball, think of that as a bonus. Wrap your head around the idea and put yourself in a mental state where we do not have a college football season and we do not have a college basketball season. So therefore, if we do get like a 6-game college football season and we get like a before a college football playoff or something, and we get just conference play in college basketball, then you're happy about it. If you are right now thinking like the only way that I'm going to be happy is if we have the Maui Invitational and if we have the Champions Classic and if we have all these other games, I really, really do not think those are going to happen. So if you put yourself in a place where you are expecting the worst and get the bonus of, hey, you know what? We actually get conference play in college basketball this year. You're going to be a much happier human being. And that's kind of where I am at this point right now. I just do not think that we're going to be able to have non-conference games. I cannot imagine in November, if these kids have been on campus for 2 months, that anybody is going to say that it's okay to send them to send 8 teams to Maui or to send like the Bahamas just said that they're not going to have any international travelers and they're supposed to be a battle for Atlantis, right? They moved the Cancun Challenge out of Mexico out of worries about traveling internationally. Here's the messed up part about it. Like in Europe, you're allowed to go wherever you want at this point, as long as you're traveling safe. You know what countries aren't allowed to travel internationally?
Yeah,
the United States, because we have morons that won't put on a mask and that did not socially distance and decided like, hey, you know what? We're just going to let this virus take its course and kill 150,000 people in this country. That's where we're at right now.
And it's regardless, sucks, like, the Maui is so awesome and Battle for like that is one of my like top 4 weeks of the year.
Look, let's talk about Willard's idea, right? Because we can't go negative on this podcast.
Willard makes the best case. Like I know Patino and some other guys. Patino is obviously the biggest name, has said conference only starting after the new year, starting in January. I love Willard's idea because you're never going to get a bubble the way that amateurism and everything's currently set up. So you can't do like the idea of me and you tossed around with sending them to a hotel and playing everything in, you know, Nashville or fill in the blank or wherever their conference tournaments are held. But this, you kind of do create that de facto bubble where you're talking about only athletes on campus. At most major schools, like basketball kind of has their own little dorm area. Football has their area. Even like the Olympic sports, they're intermingled with students, but they at least like you typically all the swimmers are in the same dorm complex. It just might not be, you know, what some others have, but it's, you have that de facto bubble. You have like the same schedule, right? November to March or November to first week of April, you have built in time in case something happens. And like Willard threw out 26 games. That's what, 4 games less than what we're typically used to.
Yeah, and that's ambitious. I'm still thinking
that schedule at least. If this is what happened and we got it, like who would complain about it besides mid majors?
That's a win. It's a win. Right. It's a win. It's a win. And I also think that it is important to keep emphasizing that the safest that these student athletes can be is probably to be on campus, right? And be on campus with their teams. And it's really not – so two things. One, today was the day when college basketball teams could return to campus or could return to working out with their coaches. And I don't know if you saw, like, Jeff Goodman was out there texting every single coach in the country trying to get, like, a straw poll of which teams were practicing because he has apparently nothing else better to do with his time than to text every single coach in the country and find out how many people were practicing instead of just looking at their Twitter accounts.
And ask for Jeff, the pictures.
That's how useful Jeff Goodman is as a reporter these days. He's washed.
He's too focused on his podcast.
Too focused on his podcast. I think it's important to note that one of the reasons why all these schools are bringing their players back is because it's better for them to be working out on campus in places where they know that they know the protocols for sanitizing, they know the protocols for cleaning, they know the protocols for socially distancing in the gym. Like the universities and the teams and the athletic programs can control that. They can't control these players going to weight rooms, like to their local LA Fitness and whatever the LA Fitness requirements are for maintaining some kind of standard of cleanliness, right? There was a report that there was 38 cases on an outbreak that came from a gym and a high school workout at a Kentucky high school. Yeah. So like that's the kind of thing that can happen if you're not careful. And what they're doing is they're being careful with these kids on campus. So part of the reason why all of them are back on campus and working out there is because it's safer for them to be in a contained environment that can be controlled. And the other part of it is that I was tweeting about this the other day and one guy came back at me and he was like, why is it fair for these student athletes to have to be on campus instead of being with their families at this time? And my response was like, it's not, this is nothing that's abnormal. They're not like they're
typically campus with, yeah, like, during holidays.
There are holiday tournaments.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why
Thanksgiving is our favorite week of the year. One of our favorite weeks of the year because there's basketball and it's on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I bet he wasn't making that point on Wednesday night when he was watching the Maui Invitational play Dayton in the title game, right? You weren't complaining about that when it was the first round of like nine different tournaments going on Thanksgiving Day. So, yes, that's a concern. That's something that we're very much aware of. And if you've ever listened to this podcast before, you know where we stand on amateurism and on whether or not these players should get paid. That said, if your concern is players being away from their families during holidays, like you got to keep that same energy when we're not in the middle of a pandemic. You know what I mean? So like,
right.
They don't go home
for like 2 days for Christmas.
Yeah. I was going to say that's, they don't go back home for like the entire winter break. Like,
there are games. There are literally games on like December 23rd. And then there are games on like December 27th.
And then one of the talking points that we always have at the start of conference play is, oh, the students aren't back on campus yet for like the first two or three home games, which is why it's always better to have your like home schedule backloaded and have it at the start of the season. So I get what you're saying and I agree with you, but that's a different conversation for a different day. So I'm here for Kevin Willard's idea. I support Kevin Willard's idea. And if Kevin Willard happens to be a listener to the College Basketball Talk podcast, you are officially invited on to come pitch your idea to the masses because I love it. I'm here.
Just bring a beer with you.
Yeah, you got to have a beer. And I'll tell you, Kevin Willard could probably throw back a couple beers.
Mm-hmm.
I say probably, but okay.
I'm confident in it.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. So, Philip Petrushev.
Yeah.
Gonzaga's All-American center. Announced today that he is going to be leaving school. His name is still entered in the NBA draft. And I don't think that he's going to end up removing his name from the NBA draft, but he is signing with a Serbian club called Mega BMX, which is kind of like they're one of the clubs that always plays the American teams on these tours. They're known for having like really talented youngsters. Filip Petrushev averaged 17.5 points and 7.9 boards, leading scorer, leading rebounder for Gonzaga last season. So obviously, was on some All-American teams, would have likely been a preseason first or second team All-American. Consensus, Reeves, what does this mean for the Zags moving forward? Before this news, I had them number two in the preseason top 25 over at NBC Sports. Can you guess how far I dropped them?
You probably didn't drop them.
I did.
Okay, so then probably just one or two.
I dropped them one spot.
So
I had dropped them. I dropped them below for people that don't realize this. I think Villanova, Gonzaga, and Baylor are consensus top three. So I dropped them one spot below Baylor.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with was kind of like the Twitter majority reaction to Gonzaga's fine. This isn't that big of a deal. Don't get me wrong. Gonzaga's fine. Like, but we're using a lot of hypotheticals here for the reasons as to why Gonzaga will be fine. Yes, what, Drew Timmy is coming back. He was very productive his freshman year. You're assuming he's just going to take this big sophomore jump without somebody like Petrushev there with him. At the same time, they have depth. And what is his name? Antoine Watson's coming off injury. Umar Ballo, everybody's raging or has, you know, talked about his redshirt last year. But you're talking about two guys who haven't played, right? Like, it's a, I think we're, the, I think the mass majority of people were very much undermining what Petrushev brought to Gonzaga and like how he was very consistent at what he was asked to do and did it well. And I know that, like, what, the him and, is it him and Tilly? Had like the worst on-off numbers for a duo from Gonzaga last year, but listen, like he was an All-American, he was a WCC Player of the Year. This is not a minor loss by any means, and we still don't know if what Gonzaga they haven't confirmed whether or not Joel Ayayi and Corey Kispert are coming back.
Yeah, those are the two that we're waiting on, and for me, so I don't think that this is like a good thing for Gonzaga, right? But my take has always been that this is something that they can withstand because they have more than enough front court depth.
That to me, I agree with.
To me, Drew Timmy is a better prospect and is going to be a better long-term player than Filip Petrushev is. And I think he might already be there. Like, I would not be surprised to see Drew Timmy put up the numbers that Filip Petrushev put up last season. So that's what I'm not really worried about that. And I also think that like they more or less play the same position. And Mark Few has not been afraid of playing two bigs together and two bigs at the same time. But they are basically like the same player. And part of what Gonzaga wants to do is they basically run like continuity ball screen, and then try to look for like a quick seal to get their big guy in the post. Yeah, and like sprint up the floor in transition and let their big guy run the floor and get a quick seal in transition. Like, so having I know that post players are dead, and Petrushev, I don't think is going to end up getting drafted. Like, if anything, he's going to be a late second round pick.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a very good defender, and he's like a low post scorer that can't play on the perimeter, and that is not what NBA teams are looking for at all right now. Unless you're Boban, like NBA teams do not want you if you could do that. If they did, Luka Garza would be the number one pick in the NBA draft.
Yeah, no, so, for sure.
So I just think that it's something where they can absolutely withstand it. Drew Timmy's going to have a chance to kind of step forward. It's going to create more minutes for Umar Ballo, who I watched him play at the, I think it was the U19 World Championships last summer.
The last one he was in, yeah.
And he was an absolute monster. And to the point that I was a little bit surprised that he redshirted his freshman season. Like, I thought that he was going to come in and be like the best sixth man in the country coming off the bench. Anton Watson is a guy that will give them lineup versatility. And I think that like they'll be a lot better defensively, especially letting like Ballo and Watson be able to play the four and the five. So it's going to be interesting. But for me, the key has always been they need those three those three guys in the backcourt. They need Jalen Suggs at the point. They need Joel Ayayi kind of playing like the second kind of backcourt point guard. Cause like he's a natural, I don't know if natural is the right word. Let me rephrase that. He is very good in ball screens. He's a good 3-point shooter. He has size. He's the perfect secondary ball handler at the college level. And we don't need to go over this again, but teams that have like two quote unquote point guards have been very, very good at the college level in recent years. Joel Ayayi is the perfect second point guard. Corey Kispert, really good defender, really, really good shooter, great size, knows who he is. Just a perfect.
He's the peak college basketball player. Like,
yeah,
he's what I assume the person who says I watch college basketball because I they care more than the NBA. That like I just picture Corey Kispert.
Yeah, but he's also very, very, very good at what he does.
I'm not undermining it, but he's just one of those guys where I don't know what he's going to be like at the next level, if there is a true next level for him, but he's going to be awesome at Gonzaga. I mean, he has been awesome at Gonzaga.
Yeah, and he's definitely a guy that can kind of like do the things that people are going to hate this comparison because it's like white guy to white guy, but he can basically be like Joe Harris the next level, more or less, right? Like that's kind of why you're drafting him. But the role that Gonzaga is going to need him to play is basically to be Joe Harris. Make a bunch of threes. Be a really good defender. Play really hard. Don't play beyond yourself. And that's just the stuff that he does great. So the other part of it is they don't really have anyone else behind those guys, right? Like Andrew Nembhard is going to have to sit out. If Andrew Nembhard was playing, then this would be a different conversation, but Andrew Nembhard is going to have to sit out. I'm not convinced that any of the other guys they have coming in are really going to be that good. So they're not going to have a lot of backcourt depth. So they need Joel Ayayi to come back from the draft. They need Corey Kispert to come back from the draft. They need Jalen Suggs to show up on campus because he's still a guy. Like there's always been a little bit of talk, and it's kind of died down like over the summer, but Jalen Suggs is always one of the guys that there was a conversation of, hey, you know, he might go pro, he might go to Australia. Like he was the name that was popping up when the G League stuff was going crazy. So those are the three guys that they really, really need. Losing Filip Petrushev hurts, but it's 100% something they can withstand because they have plenty of front court depth.
They do. It's just, my thing is, let's just react with everyone being like, no, they're still preseason number one and everything like that. Because again, and I understand we do use hypotheticals when looking at forecasting what we think is going to happen with the season. But like, I thought my takeaway was a lot of people were just kind of undermining what he did this past year and how good he was in the role that he had to be for Gonzaga, who again, they were the number two team on KenPom. This wasn't like a 7-seed Gonzaga. No, like they were going to be a 1-seed Final Four national title contender. And he was the WCC player of the year, a starter for them. Like that matters to me still too. So I agree that yes, this is the one that they can withstand kind of the most, I guess, in a way, because of the depth that they have, or alleged depth that they have coming in, or with red shirts, obviously.
Alleged depth.
But because again, what if Watson gets hurt again? What if Ballo's game doesn't transfer from FIBA to college? Like we've seen this all happen before. It wouldn't be abnormal.
No, so, you're 100% right about that. It's just I don't think that there are other teams that you say that about every other team though. Like what if Antoine doesn't pan out for Villanova? Right. Like what if?
I agree with that. This was the first time that my biggest takeaway was, wow, everyone's just like completely writing off the fact that this dude was going to be an All-American and just like, no, Gonzaga's fine.
Okay. So the only other thing I'll say about that is I do feel like this was the one where he was kind of I don't want to say expected to go, but it just made the most sense, right?
No, like, 100%.
Cause he's never gonna, like he is who he is.
Yeah. Like he's go get paid whenever you can, because
Don't risk having Umar Ballo come in and like take your minutes, because Drew Timmy might be better than him. So
like you improve your game, you might get like a more consistent 15 footer. That's like that's really about it.
Yeah, he is what he is. So Gonzaga is still a national title contender. I still have him number three in the country. Do you know off the top of your head who your top five is, who your top three is, who your number one preseason number one is?
Yeah, I think I had the same three as you. I'm trying to remember what I had. when we did that back in the day or back before. I know I had those three. I had Villanova one. I know I had those three. I want to say I maybe had Kentucky at five.
I definitely did not have Kentucky that high. I think I have Kentucky at 15 right now, and that's assuming Olivier Saar does not get a waiver. I'll bump him up if he does have the waiver. Yeah. I have Virginia at four, Michigan State at five if they get Xavier Tillman back, Kansas at six, Duke at seven, Iowa at eight, assuming they get Luka Garza back, Tennessee at nine if they get Eves Pons back, and Texas Tech at 10.
Yeah, I think I Virginia at four sounds right for me because I remember I was talking about how we just need to start blindly trusting Tony Bennett and that they're always going to be like a top 10 preseason team.
Yep, pretty much. All right, so do you know who I just bumped into the back end of my top 25 at number 25 in the country?
It is your boy who wants all the smoke, Memphis and Penny.
The Memphis Tigers, and that is because they added Musa Cisse. Rig, say it with me, Musa Cisse.
It's a hell of a name. Like, you got to be an athlete if your name's Musa Cisse. That's a fire name.
Musa Cisse. It's so
you
easy.
You be famous. Say. You have to be famous.
And you cannot have a lisp if you say Musa Cisse.
Oh, God. That would be bad.
I feel like, I don't know if it's just because we're Tottenham fans and like half of their roster is named Musa, but I feel like Musa has been a name that's become much more prevalent in my life over the course of like the last 5 years. I never knew the name Musa until I started watching soccer and I met this guy named Musa Dembele.
Musa Dembele. Musa Sissoko. Like that, I just assume every Musa is just going to follow a Sissoko at this point now.
Yeah. The best part is that that Spurs at one point were linked with a striker named Musa Dembele at the same time that they had the midfielder Musa Dembele. And I wanted them to get the other guy so we could have Musa and then Tusa.
Yeah, like I want us to run like a 4-3-3 with like Musa's the center back, Musa's the center mid, and Musa's the striker. Just give me all the Musas.
You know what?
If Musa Cisse doesn't work out in Memphis basketball, like give him a trial run over there in Tottenham.
Dude, he's 6'11". He'd be a great keeper.
It worked with Peter Crouch.
Stick him in goal. So Musa Cisse, he is from Guinea. He spent time in New York, and he then moved to Memphis to the LaSalle School, where Scalabissier played before going to whatever that random prep school was that he went to. Spent 2 years in Memphis and has since committed to the University of Memphis. He is a five-star prospect. He was initially in the class of 2021. He reclassified. He's considered a top 10 recruit. He's 6'11". He is considered the best rim protector and best defensive big man in this class. And I do expect him to be one of the best rim protectors in college basketball next season. He's really energetic on the glass. His offensive game has a long way to come. And for me, he is the piece that kind of brings everything else together for Memphis. I have a very strong take on this. I will get into it as soon as you tell me what you think about Cisse committing to the University of Memphis.
It's helpful. Like, I just don't know what he's going to do this year for Memphis. Like, in terms of who's going to be their go-to guy offensively, right? Like, last year they had James Wiseman for like four halves, and then Precious Achiuwa kind of filled in that role. Who do you think is their guy this year where Penny can say, go get me a bucket?
I think it's going to end up being DJ Jeffries, but I don't think they're going to be a great offensive team. My take on Memphis is, like, last year they ranked 200 something in offensive efficiency.
They weren't fun to watch.
And they were fifth in defensive efficiency. And I do think that they're going to end up being the same kind of team again this year, where they're built around their defense and the offense kind of comes along a little bit. But I said at the time, and I think we talked about it on this podcast, that the best part of the Memphis recruiting class last year. So to rewind a little bit, there was a conversation for a while about whether or not Memphis was a disappointment in college basketball last season, because they had all this hype entering the season and didn't come anywhere near living up to it. Now, part of that is because DJ Jeffries got hurt, and obviously James Wiseman quit, and you lose the number one player in the country, and that's going to hurt who you are. But I also think that they were wildly and I would argue irresponsibly overrated entering the season, partially because of the way that Penny
he hyped them up so much that
he really embraced the idea of we want all the smoke, blah blah blah, whatever. And like I get it. Like Penny Hardaway is always going to think he's the best at everything. That's part of the reason why he was so good at what he did as a basketball player.
And but, I have no problem with it. It's good salesmanship from for the casual fan.
But I also think it was important to note that they had the number one recruiting class last year, but it was because they had James Wiseman and Precious Achiuwa. James Wiseman, Precious Achiuwa, and I guess like Boogie Ellis is a very, very different, like three best players, three five-stars in, say, Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, and Cam Reddish, or Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and Marquise Teague. Like, it's very, very different from what Memphis had, from what some of these other great recruiting classes were. My point last year, and I said it on the podcast, I wrote it, I have the receipts, was that the best part about that recruiting class is they have like four or five really good four-star players that are going to be there for two or three years. Like Penny built the foundation for his program moving forward with the recruiting class that he brought in. And I think that's going to end up playing out next year. Like their lineups that they can roll out where they have Damian Ball and Boogie Ellis and Lester Quinones and DJ Jeffries are going to be really good, right? Throw in Alex Lomax, who is going to be a junior coming back, and throw in Isaiah Stokes, who is a redshirt freshman that has a chance to be, a redshirt junior that has a chance to be pretty good, a Florida transfer. And there was like the core of a team that could be really good. What they were missing was a guy that could just anchor the paint, that could let some of these long athletic dudes on the perimeter go out and try to jump passing lanes and go out and play some pressure defense and go out and try to create with their athleticism and some of the physical tools that they have. And Musa Cisse is that guy. If he's one of the best rim protectors in basketball, you can go out and you can gamble on the perimeter a little bit more, knowing that nobody's going to be making layups around the basket with Cisse around there. And as long as, you know, the saying is the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores. And as long as these guys like DJ Jeffries and Lester Quinones, as long as they kind of take that sophomore year jump, which I'm fully expecting them to, all of a sudden, like you have a pretty good sophomore class with a guy that could be a star on DJ Jeffries, a guy that is a really good shooter in Lester Quinones, and three good backcourt players in Lomax, Ba, and Boogie Ellis, and add just a rock defensively in the middle. All of a sudden, that's a team that can make a little bit of noise. Throwing that possibility of them getting Landers Nolly eligible, which I don't think is all that likely, and DeAndre Williams eligible, which I do think is quite a bit more likely. Speaking of which, do you know who DeAndre Williams played for last year?
Yeah, I do.
Evansville.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know how many times really he good. Beat a Missouri Valley team last year? Not once. How many times did he win in Rupp Arena last year?
Wait a minute. He might have won some games in early 2019 in the Missouri Valley.
Yeah, okay. But the larger point is they have this really good sophomore class.
Yeah.
And they were just missing a rim protector and a rebounder and a defensive presence in the middle, and they added that in Musa Cisse. For me, that makes them a back-end top 25 team. And for me, that puts them in a position where if everything comes together, if Boogie Ellis lives up to his potential, and if DJ Jeffries ends up having a breakout sophomore year, and if Lester Quinones is a guy that shoots like 40% from three, and Landers Nolly gets eligible, you're looking at a team that there's a realistic possibility of them winning the American next year. Now, I don't want to get the hype train going, like, and I don't want to be the guy that says like they're going to be better than Houston, because at this point, if you give Kelvin Sampson, you, me, Sam Vecenie, Jeff Goodman, and Jeff Borzello at center, then I think that Houston team...
Wait, what are we doing not running Goodman at center here?
You don't want... he's soft. He's softer than Charmin. But the point is, like, whatever five you give Kelvin Sampson, I'm just going to bet on them to win the American at this point. Because
they're going to finish top three every year.
Yeah, so I'm still taking Houston to win the league. But I do think that if the stars align for this Memphis team, they have a chance to be really, really good. And I think their floor is as a team that's going to be in and around the top 25 and should be like a 6-7-8 seed in the NCAA tournament. And Musa Cisse is the piece that they were missing.
Yeah. My fears are that, one, Cisse just doesn't protect the rim as well as we think he's going to, and is still the zero that, or near zero that he is offensively, where he's going to be a year away, right? Or like a year, he'll need a year to develop, and he could be a guy. I don't think he's going to be a guy regardless that 5 years in the NBA, we're like, how is he not better in college basketball?
Yeah. I mean, for the record, to me, he is a guy that you're kind of like a Mitchell Robinson, where you're not expecting anything other than ducks from him offensively.
Right.
Lobs
right.
to the rim, stuff in transition, offensive rebounds. But like, he kind of is what he is. Like, I don't want to say he's a zero, because the ability
he's not a zero. Floor, he's not great like, for himself.
Yeah, but spacing the floor vertically does have quite a bit of value.
No, for sure.
That he can do. But he's not Frank Kaminsky. He's not Carl Towns. Like, you're never going to get that.
You know, you talk about how they were so good defensively last year, and they were also really bad offensively. They were still 10-8 in the American, 21-10 overall, and probably not making the NCAA tournament. And now you take away their best player in Precious Achiuwa. And yeah, like, I understand, you know, a group of freshmen turning sophomores is helpful. I just don't know what to make of that class yet. Right? Like, I like Boogie Ellis. Like, I like when Les Quinones is shooting, I'm like, yeah, it's probably going in. I think Alex Lomax is fine. Damian Ball. But again, you're talking about like a lot of guys that I'm just kind of like, yeah, butts with, where I just don't know what their peak is, and their peak might be back end top 25.
You're not wrong. Like, I'm not sitting here saying
you're higher on them than I am. Is essentially what I'm getting at.
I'm not trying to say that this is going to be a team that's like guaranteed to go out and like be the best Memphis team that we've ever seen, and be better than the Derrick Rose team or anything like that. I just think that they have quite a bit of potential based on what they're bringing back, and the one piece that they were missing is basically the skill set that Musa Cisse provides. So I'm bullish on them. I think that they're back in top 25. And again, calling them the number 25 team in the country, like, I'm not sitting here saying that I think they're going to be better than Gonzaga. I think they are.
Yeah, you're talking about a team that is probably losing to Gonzaga in the round
of the tournament. In the second round of the tournament. So I think they got a chance. You got anything to say about Jonathan Kuminga?
Just be ready. Like, you know, I feel like it's repetitive when it happens, or, you know, whenever.
You know what? Before you get into it, I should probably set the stage. Jonathan Kuminga, number one recruit in the class of 2021, reclassified to the class of 2020. I know it's complicated thinking about all that stuff, but trust me, it's something that happens in these days. And he has decided to go to the G League for the same kind of contract that Jalen Green got, something in the $500,000 a year range, and he will not be playing college basketball. The only fan base that I think has a real right to kind of feel disappointed about this is probably Texas Tech, because his brother Joel Ntabwabwe, I don't know how to say his last name.
Ntabwabwe, I think, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, his brother plays for Texas Tech. So I think that the Red Raiders probably had the best shot of anybody to get him. But this thing was, I know it's really annoying when sports writers say, like, that was expected to happen, but it was
expected to happen.
it was not a secret in basketball circles that Jonathan Kuminga was not going to college.
No. So it is repetitive to a degree when this is now happening, but I think it's what we have to do, because this is going to be the new norm. And listen, I'm not saying it's going to ruin college basketball. I'm not going to say that, you know, this is the death of college basketball, because as long as there's laundry and as long as there's programs, we're still going to watch. We're still going to cheer for teams. The problem is, I've said this before, it does hurt because of two things. One, I love when the best players play college basketball. And Jonathan Kuminga is one of the best players in high school basketball. He also, like, not only just Kuminga, but guys like Kuminga in general also bring a following into college basketball, where they are well known, whether it's through Instagram highlights or YouTube highlights or whatever. So put those on, and I think it does help grow the sport, which is a sport. Like, listen, I don't want to be the, like, NHL or even like ML or like soccer to a degree, or baseball hardo, where it's like, no, like, you need to love my sport at all times. It's like, no, bring all the casual fans in as possible. Like, that's – I want to see the sport grow more than anything. At the same time, what I say is it does hurt where more and more sophomores and juniors are leaving than ever before, right? Like, there are more pro opportunities, more ways to make money playing professional basketball than ever. So you see sophomores and juniors, guys who, like, 10 years ago would have been four-year guys or three-year guys are now out after two. And instead of, like, having the next sophomore, like, kind of make that jump, or you're missing out on this. There's now four top 15 guys that we're not going to see in college basketball, a guy who could replace a guy leaving, right? So that hurts too, where you unexpectedly lose a guy who you thought was going to be a three-year player, let's say, after 2 years. Hey, and we missed out on a chance now to replace him with a top 15 player. And that sucks because, again, those players tend to be pretty good.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to this that I didn't say during the podcast we did about Jalen Green making this decision or any of the multiple podcasts that we've had in the past. So I'll let what you say stand, and I agree with all of it.
Good for Kuminga, good for everybody involved, because you should have the option.
Yeah.
Just so we don't get yelled at for people saying we don't want to see kids get paid.
We do want to see kids paid. We want to see kids get paid, and the best way to allow kids to get paid and see him in college basketball is to open up the NIL rights. It's something that we've talked about ad nauseum, and it's not something that I think we should get into today. So, Riggs, it's always a pleasure. Maybe next week we'll actually go out and do a run it back podcast if we don't have like three or four huge.
Keep giving us news though, because I love that. Give us good news. We said positive vibes only last week. We need good news to keep coming on in.
We do. We do need good news. And as always, if you leave us 5 stars and you request a game in the reviews of the podcast, it is something that we want to get to. We mentioned this the last couple of pods, but random great regular season games. A couple episodes ago, we did the Kansas-Oklahoma 3 overtime game when Buddy Hield scored 46 points. So just things like that, things that you remember from random college basketball seasons in the past. Great games, iconic games. That's the stuff that we want. We will, if you give us 5 stars and you make a request in the comments, it's something that we will answer when we don't have all of this new stuff to kind of get to. So, Riggs, it's always a pleasure. Please rate, review, 5 stars, my podcast. Then go find the Fundamentally Sound podcast. Rate that, review that, subscribe to that. Do all of the good stuff. Make us happy as podcasters. My man, I will see you next month.